Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's going on, everybody? Happy Sunday. Welcome in to an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at AndyHermanNFL. You can follow the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. I am extra excited today because we have a brand new partnership here on the Pack-A-Day Podcast that I could not be more excited about. We have a pizza sponsorship here on the podcast. It is Luigi's Pizza, and they are going to be sponsoring the Luigi's Pizza Player of the Week. Today, we're going to do the Defensive Player of the Week. Tomorrow, we'll do the Offensive Player of the Week. The best part about this, I don't even need any Luigi's Pizza talking points. I have multiple, and I mean, we're talking like five or six Luigi's pizzas in my freezer at all times. The whole reason that this came about was because I have been having Luigi's pizza as my victory pizza. I took a picture of it. They recognized it and we started having the conversation. So I am so geeked out about it. It's the best. It is absolutely the best frozen pizza you can possibly imagine. I legitimately, it is freaking amazing. So I'm so excited to be working with them. And if you're not familiar, they're all throughout the Midwest. So if you're anywhere in Wisconsin, Minnesota, North Dakota, South Dakota, Iowa, Michigan, or Illinois, you should be able to find Luigi's Pizzas near you. Make sure to ask your grocer about that. But player of the week, Luigi's bringing it to you. Oh, by the way, just really quick, make sure to follow Luigi's on Twitter at Luigi's Pizza. And here's the big thing. This is my ask. This is my ask of you. Follow them on Twitter. And then tell them that you need a Pack-A-Day pizza, a Pack-A-Day podcast pizza, whatever we want to call it. There needs to be a Luigi's Pack-A-Day pizza. That has to happen. So follow them on Twitter and make sure to let them know that. But Defensive Player of the Week brought to you by Luigi's. This it has to be Rashawn Gary. Has to be Rashawn Gary. He has been nothing but phenomenal all throughout week one of training camp. I think he's got like 1,000,007 sacks. Yes, working against Andre Dillard. And then he basically got Andre Dillard benched. So in comes Kadeem Telford. And Telford had a couple good reps here and there, but Rashawn Gary sort of took care of business with Telford as well. We need to see some more Zach Tom versus Rashawn Gary, meaning once Zach Tom is healthy and ready to go in team, that would be a much more fun matchup. But in the meantime, Rashawn Gary is just going to make everyone's life miserable at that right tackle position because they're going to have to go against him every day. And it's not, the results are amazing, yes, but it's the way that he's going about his business. And he is playing with violence. He's playing with intensity. He is everything that you would want and expect out of Rashawn Gary, no longer hampered by, you know, coming back from that torn ACL. He's in phenomenal shape. He looks amazing and he absolutely tore it up and has been the leader of that defense through the first week of camp. Super fun to watch, must watch player every single practice. And he gets the inaugural Defensive Player of the Week, Rashawn Gary, brought to you by Luigi's Pizza. All right, quick shout out as well to Chris Huven, Packer Fan 12, Brian Yerger, Brandon Johnson, and Derek Bolt for becoming a brand new Pack-A-Day Podcast YouTube members. Appreciate you guys a ton. And now we've got a ton to get to because we've got a Jordan Love contract to discuss. And of course, everything that happened at day five of training camp. But let's start with that Jordan Love contract. We do now have the specifics of the deal. And what I always like to look at, I know that a lot of people like to get concerned about how much cash they're getting and the signing, but what I care about as a fan and as somebody who covers the team is how it affects the salary cap. I care about the salary cap hit. And then of course, like how you can get out of it and things like that, but that is sort of tied into the salary cap hit. As a fan, you know, I want Jordan Love to get paid and whatever, but like, I don't care how much money goes from a Packers bank account to Jordan Love's bank account. It doesn't affect us at all. It really doesn't. The only thing that affects us as fans is how much it accounts against the salary cap. So that is my purview. That is what I want to focus on. So in 2024, this year that we are currently in, if you were unaware, Jordan Love will make $20.257 million, $20,257,731. All right. Year one, $20.2 million. Next year, 2025, he will make $29,737,731. In year three, $36,157,731. All right. Year four, 2027, $42,457,731. And then in year five, $74,200,000. And then in 2029, in year six, as a dead cap hit, he will not be under contract at this point in time based on the current contract. He will have $34.7 million in dead salary. So let's kind of break this down first of all, because of course it gets announced as a four-year, $220 million contract extension, which is true. It is a four-year, $220 million contract extension. However, that goes on top of the 1 year that he already had scheduled on his deal. So in totality, this is now a five-year contract. And if you take the 5 years and you add all of that up together, it accounts for $237.5 million over 5 years, including the year that's already on there in 2024. So 2024, then 4 years beyond it. You take 237.5 divided by five with all 5 years, you get $47.5 million per season. So yes, it's going to get announced as a $55 million extension because it is, but he will count against the Packers' salary cap per year on average, $47.5 million. Now, there's a lot more, again, that goes into that because it's actually being split over six seasons with the dead cap hits and the void years and things like that. But if you want to look at it in a different way, it is really truly more of a five-year, $237.5 million deal, averaging $47.5 million per year. That sounds a lot different than $55 million, right? If he's making $55 million per year, that's $8 million more or $7.5 million more per year every year through the length of the contract. That's a lot different. So if you were super concerned that Jordan Love shouldn't, you know, get $55 million, he should be more in that 40-ish range, well, adding on the year that he already has on his contract, he is. He's in the $47.5 million range. What this ultimately sort of did for Green Bay and how they structured this contract is they gave themselves a four-year window. This is really a four-year deal. And then they're going to have to reevaluate everything in 2028 when he's got that $74.2 million cap hit. But the next 4 years are probably going to be pretty standard slash status quo. Maybe in year four with that $42.4 million cap hit, there is some money with that that they could look to restructure and move around a little bit, but not a ton. So that could be a year, but in year five in 2028, with that $74.2 million cap hit, that's when we're going to talk about, like, that's not going to be a real hit. Like, they will absolutely have to do something at that point, either restructure or get out of that deal if he's not performing the way that he would be expected to. But I don't think anyone's super worried about that at this point in time. But that four-year window, right? $20.2 mil, $29.7 mil, $36.1 mil, and $42.4 mil. Over that period of time, he makes a total of $128 million or counts $128.6 million against the salary cap. Over 4 years, that's only $32.2 million. So he's averaging a cap hit of $32.2 million over the next 4 years. Now, in that final year, in 2028, as I mentioned, you've got $74.2 million. And then the year after that, when he's not even on the team, you've got $34.7 million. So you have $104.9 million with basically just 1 year of play starting in 2028, which is, again, why I'm telling you there will be restructures. That will not be the contract that actually takes place. So I'll say it one more time. Green Bay opened a four-year window, and then we'll see where we're at in 2028. That's the approach here. And if you look at it this way, I really like the way that they structure this. I'm not a huge void year guy. I wish you could sort of avoid some of that, no pun intended, avoid the void a little bit more. But how would you rather do it? If you want to have a player making $47.5 million per year, well, then you're going to have to pay them $47.5 million per year. And then, you know, you're paying them $27 million more this year. Well, you don't have that money, first of all, or at least it'd be very close. They wouldn't have enough money for practice squad and in-season transactions or things like that. So they, you know, really couldn't do it right now. And then again, next year, you're going to have to pay $18 million more. The year after that, $11 million more. The year after that, $5 million more. You're trying to keep that salary cap as low as possible for Jordan over those first 4 years so that you do have that open window. And that's an important thing, is making sure that you can stay competitive during that period of time. And if you sort of look at it, you know, in the way that Green Bay just even has their salary cap right now, the Packers have right now, this season, $49.27 million in dead salary. Just in dead salary. That's not going towards any player that's on the team. That's going to keep getting lower and lower. So if you don't think that Green Bay can afford, you know, a 40-some million dollar player at quarterback, they have $49.27 million just in dead salary cap in 2024 that's not going towards any player that's on the roster in 2024. They will be able to afford this $47.5 million per year over 5 years. And like I said, one more time, I like the fact that they backloaded it so that you do have this open window with Jordan Love. That is going to be important so that they can continue to put players around him, that they can continue to re-sign the players that they will need to re-sign over that four-year period. And then you get to 2028, which, by the way, 2028, we will be talking about the next presidential election in 2028. That's how far away that is to worry about. It'll be here, I'm sure, before you know it, but you worry about that when you get to that point. And in the meantime, you've got 2024, 2025, 2026, and 2027 all to go out and try to win during that time frame. So I love the fact that they opened it up that way, and then you figure it out in 2028. Hey, everybody. For those that have been listening to the podcast for some time now, you know how invested I am in the world of Prize Picks and how much more enjoyable it's made the entire daily fantasy experience for me. And it's not hard to understand why it's America's number one daily fantasy sports app with over 5 million active members. If you've maybe been on the fence about getting in on the fun, there's never been a better time than right now to sign up. It's officially Team USA season, and you, yes you, could turn $10 into $1,000 while watching Team USA rack up the gold medals this summer. You can make a Prize Picks lineup of players across basketball, soccer, tennis, golf, and more in as little as 60 seconds. Just pick more or pick less on player stat projections and you're locked in. And if you're looking for promotions, Prize Picks has you covered every week. Make sure to check out Tuesday promotions as they lower select player stat projections to help your lineup hit. This week, I'm going with Team USA Basketball. Two big stars, Anthony Edwards and Aja Wilson, as I'm absolutely stoked for the return of international basketball. And the best part is that you can download the Prize Picks app today and use code PACKADAY for a first deposit match up to $100. That's code PACKADAY on Prize Picks for a deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. Hello, friends. As many of you know, a few years back, the Milwaukee Bucks were in the NBA Finals, and I desperately wanted to go to Game 6 in Milwaukee to see them win the championship. As you can imagine, prices were insane, and I kept going back and forth with different apps to try and find the cheapest tickets possible. I finally found them, clicked purchase, and of course, they were gone. Goodbye, Game 6 of the NBA Finals. Now, thankfully, the day of the game, I was able to find a ticket, but the entire thing was so expensive and way too stressful. I really wish I could have simply used Game Time to alleviate all of the stress and all of the hassle. I've started using Game Time app for purchasing all of my tickets, and I wish I would have done so sooner. From low prices to easy to find tickets to last minute ticket deals, the Game Time app is perfect for all of my ticket needs. Game Time is the fastest growing ticketing app in the country for a reason. You can get images of your seat before you buy, you can buy tickets in a matter of seconds, two clicks only in fact, and tickets are sent directly to your phone so you never need to dig through your email. The Game Time guarantee means you'll always get the best price. If you find tickets in the same section and row for less, Game Time will credit you 110% of the difference. Snag the tickets without the stress with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use code PACKADAY for $20 off your first purchase. That's code PACKADAY. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code PACKADAY for $20 off. Download Game Time today. Last minute tickets, lowest price, guaranteed. So I know some people posted, why would they not use that extra salary cap money that they have this year and maybe avoid some of those super, you know, dead cap hits in 2029 or at least some of it, or maybe have less of a salary cap hit in 2028? Why are you not using that 20, 25 plus million that they have in salary cap space right now to utilize that towards some of Love's deal. And yes, they could have done that. But what you have to remember is with carryover cap now, there's really no advantage one way or the other. Like if Green Bay wanted more flexibility now in case something comes up at the trade deadline or in case they can find a free agent towards the end of, or right before the season starts or in training camp, whatever, they still have money to spend. And during a time where you're trying to open a window and keep options open, that can be a very important thing to have. And if they don't use it, they do not lose it. They can carry over all of that salary cap into next year, and now they have an additional 20-some million to spend next year. So they can carry over that cap. It's not like the NBA. It's not a use it or lose it. It is, if you don't use it, you can carry it over to next year. You don't have to, but Green Bay is definitely in a position where they absolutely would do that. So you're just robbing from the same bank one way or the other. It's all your money. You can always carry it over. And now in the meantime, you have more flexibility. So there is no reason to front load it anymore because you want to be able to have that flexibility. And if you don't need it, if you never add a player, if you still have $25 million left over in salary cap space at the end of the season, you just move it over to next year. No harm, no foul. And that's exactly why they did it the way that they did it. And here's the other thing too. If for some reason with this deal, if Jordan struggles, like they were going to sign him to some sort of, you know, 4 more year deal. They got him at 4 years. And again, even if they signed him to a 7, 8, 9 year deal, something crazy, it was probably only going to be 4 real years anyway. And now if at 4 years, things aren't going the way that you expected to, you have an out in it. So again, number one, people concerned about, should they have given him this much money? We'll talk about that more in just a moment. Should they have utilized more of their salary cap right now? The answer to that is no, because they can carry it over anyway and it gives them more flexibility. Another thing that I get is that people upset that Jordan Love is making $220 million. I saw in the comments, there's a lot of people out there that are struggling in life. How is, why are quarterbacks getting $220? Well, here's the thing. The NFL is set up that to make a crap ton of money, and it's a revenue split between the owners and the players. If you don't want the players to make that much money, well, guess what? It's going to go to a richer owner who's now going to have more billions of dollars. So me personally, I would rather have as much of that money as possible go to the players and not to the owners. And if you're just uncomfortable in general with anyone having that much money or whatever, well, that's not a sports topic. That's an economic topic. That is a political topic. And we could talk about that, but I would have lots of comments on if we were going to discuss just that. So that is not a place for the Pack-A-Day podcast to talk about how much money sports and athletes, players should make and if there should be a cap on it and if that, some of that money should be taxed more or taxed. Not our conversation. It's a sports podcast. We're going to stick on that for this time being. So yes, if you're uncomfortable with a quarterback getting paid $220 million or whatever it is, more than that over the course of his current contract and, teachers or whatever making a lot less, I'm sorry. We're probably not going to solve that today. So we can just throw that to the side right now. And then the last thing, if you look at why Jordan should get this money or is this too soon to give Jordan, $55 million per year? You have to understand that in a league where quarterbacks are getting paid, you are basically bound by what teams are currently giving quarterbacks. And then you have to judge your quarterback against those. When Trevor Lawrence makes $55 million per year, and Jordan Love's last season was better than any season that Trevor Lawrence has put out there, his agent is certainly going to argue that Jordan should get as much, if not more, than Trevor Lawrence. If Tua Tagovailoa is getting $53 million per year, and the year that Jordan put out last year is better than any season Tua's had, and Tua's had a bunch of injuries, his agency is going to argue he should get more than $53 million. If Jared Goff is getting $53 million per year, his agency is going to make the argument that he should be getting more than Jared Goff because of what he did last season. If Jordan Love is outperforming players that are getting $55, $53 million per year, he's going to get more than 53 or at least around that 53 to 55 million per year. And that's exactly what they gave him, 55 million, because Green Bay is going to go back and say, well, he doesn't have the longevity of a Trevor Lawrence. And they're going to say, yeah, but that 1 year was better than anything he's ever done. And they're right. So this is just the going rate. It's the next iteration. And Dak will probably now beat that. And then the next quarterback contract will beat that. And the cycle will just continue. And again, if you're uncomfortable with that, I get it. I understand it. But that is just the going rate in the NFL that you have to pay. And the alternative is what you have to consider. What is your alternative? He's going to hold out until he gets a new contract. And if he doesn't, first of all, you end up in a nightmare scenario there. So then let's just say he plays under the current contract, which isn't that much different than what you're now paying him this year anyway. And then you want to franchise him next year. Okay, now you're going to pay him an exorbitant amount of money on a one-year franchise tag. And then you're still in a very miserable situation. Your quarterback's not happy. You could hold out again. You're, again, taking away all the momentum away from this young team that's got everything going in the right direction. Even if he plays that season out, you can then double franchise him, which the number skyrockets above that. And there's no, you know, really like built-in mechanism for you to lower that cap hit either next year or the following year when it's on a franchise tag. Like, you're just paying like the 55 million, 60 million, whatever, 50, probably 50 million straight up. That's his cap hit. Instead of it being, what is it? What do we say? 29 million next year. You're looking at probably 50, 53 million in just salary cap just for 1 year. So the franchise tag is completely unattainable. And again, he might hold out. There might be a lot of problems that you have with those negotiations. And then it gets even worse when you try to tag him for a second time. And then he probably just walks after that because of the entire situation. It's an entire nightmare. And what are you going to do in the meantime? Clifford and Michael Pratt, bring in a Ryan Tannehill. You're just in no man's land. There's no opportunity for success with this team that is set up for success right now. So they have a 4-year commitment to Jordan Love. They have a 4-year window to win with Jordan Love. They will do everything in their power to win in that 4-year window, maybe multiple times. That'd be great. But they're going to do everything they can to win in that 4-year window and then reevaluate in 2028. And what more could you possibly want from Green Bay in this situation? They gave themselves options. And if you look at kind of what you would want to do in this, like what were your goals of figuring out this contract? You want to get Jordan Love paid. All right, that's clearly an important piece of this, is that it's a two-side negotiation. You need to make sure the other side is happy with the result as well. You want to open a window for your team to succeed, and you want to give yourself outs just in case. This is a package 4-year deal that you are committing yourself and your team to Jordan Love for 4 years, opening up a window to be successful, and then seeing where you're at from there. What more could you ask for in that situation? If you move on from Love, you are setting yourself way back, and it's probably going to take longer than 4 years to try to open up another window and find another quarterback. Good luck. You do not want to be in that space. It is a nightmare far more often than not. So that's an unattainable option, and you don't want to go through the entire holdout process and scenario. It's all bad. This was the best possible result, in my opinion, that Green Bay could have got done. Jordan Love gets to be the highest paid player in the league. You open yourself a 4-year window. And I think you get a contract that really makes sense for all sides involved. Yeah, that's it. I don't have anything else to say about it. It's a good deal. Good deal for Jordan. Good deal for the Packers. And we now have a 4-year Jordan Love opportunity to see what he can do, what this team can do. And hopefully this team can find a way to bring home a Lombardi or two or three or four during that 4-year stretch and then reevaluate after that. All right, training camp. Let's get to the participation first. Jordan Love returned. Players not practicing: Ketan Oladapo, Marshawn Lloyd, Tucker Kraft, Robert Rochelle, and Josh Myers. Oladapo still on the non-football injury list. Marshawn Lloyd, hip injury. Tucker Kraft still on the PUP with the pack. Rochelle with the calf injury. And then Josh Myers out personal. Here was your starting lineup for the day in the first team drill. Jordan Love at quarterback, of course, which was amazing to see. Josh Jacobs at running back. Romeo Doubs and Dontavian Wicks at wide receiver. Luke Musgrave and Ben Sims at tight end. Rashid Walker at left tackle. Sean Ryan at left guard. Elton Jenkins at center. Jordan Morgan at right guard. Kadeem Telford again at right tackle. Andre Diller did rotate in at right tackle. Rashawn Gary and Preston Smith at defensive end. TJ Slayton and Kenny Clark at defensive tackle. McDuffie, Quay Walker, and Eric Wilson at linebackers. Eric Stokes, Jair Alexander at corner, Xavier McKinney, and it was Javon Bullard today at safety. Those were your starters. As far as Jordan Love goes, we talked about this on the quick hits. Started extremely slow, 1 for 8, 3 yards, interception, another ball to Jair that could have been picked off, another couple balls that just missed egregiously, one that went well over Dontayvion Wicks' head, one that went way wide of Dontayvion Wicks, a ball that was completely behind, want to say it was Watson maybe, but either way, there was one that was way behind, and Eric Stokes was able to make a play on it. I think it was Watson that was open over the middle. Just some very, you know, just a little rust, and I think just a little amped up, and some uncharacteristic throws is what I'm looking for here from Jordan Love. After that, he settled in, and all of a sudden he caught fire. Play action, Jaden Reed, 15 yards in stride. Christian Watson, 15 yards in stride. Drops his arm angle lower and finds Romeo Doubs over the middle in stride. Escapes the rush, a play that clearly would have been a sack if it had been Clifford or Michael Pratt. We've seen it a million times over the last few days, except Jordan's able to escape, make a positive out of it, and find Josh Jacobs for a positive gain. Hits Christian Watson for a 47-yard completion down the field. Beautiful, gorgeous deep ball. Honestly, one of the best deep balls I think I've ever seen Jordan throw. Perfect spiral, dropped it in a bucket. Watson runs under it. Eric Stokes in coverage, makes the sliding catch. It's perfect. Absolutely perfect ball. Great play by Christian. Okay coverage from Stokes. Like, it wasn't brutal. He was like a half a step behind him, but Watson stacked him, got the opportunity to get the ball. Love placed it perfectly, and it's a 47-yard completion. Huge play for the offense, and then hits Romeo Doubs on a 10-yard out to complete the 2-minute drive and finish it with a touchdown from, again, Love to Romeo Doubs. So rusty start, caught fire. The rest was good from there. Just worked off a little bit of that rust and nervousness, I'm sure, early, and then once he settled in, he looked exactly like what Jordan Love left off as a season ago, going in those games against Dallas and just the success he had in the second half of the year. All right. Huge player of the day also was Javon Bullard. His first big impact play was against Christian Watson in the slot, and Watson ran a slant. Bullard had picture perfect coverage, batted away the pass, incomplete. Safety versus, you know, Christian Watson in the slot, where Watson can get deep, he can go other direction. That's a tough ask, and Bullard covered it perfectly and knocked away the pass. Then against Jacob Eason, Bullard was with the twos at that point, jumps a pass. It was a little bit behind the intended wide receiver. Bullard jumps it, picks it off, takes it to the house for a pick six. He also had quite a pop on Luke Musgrave on a play in the open field. No tackling, but you can kind of, you know, give players a little bit of a pop. He gave Musgrave enough pop to knock him over. Not dirty, but definitely physical. Defense got super excited after that. And also combined with Edgerrin Cooper on a really nice run stop as well. Felt like Bullard was all over the place in his best day of practice by far. Another player that I want to talk about quickly here is Jair Alexander. Now, I mentioned Jair Alexander had a near pick of Jordan Love on Love's second throw of the day. Gorgeous coverage, jumped it. He had to make a diving play on the ball. Couldn't quite come up with it. One I'm sure he would have liked to have had. But Jair has been locked down. And I mean locked down so far. He's not allowing anything. Like, they're not even throwing his way more often than not. And then Jordan Love challenges him and he almost picks it off. He looks fantastic. He looks honed in. He looks, you know, there's a little bit more chirping today from Jair, but it still feels like he's just focused on the job at hand. And you never want to take away Ja from being Ja. Like, that's kind of what makes him special too. But you also love the intensity and the focus from him, because if he's intense and focused and just working on his craft, you know he's going to be one of the best corners in football. And that's what Green Bay needs out of him. They need him to be one of the best corners in football. He looks like prime Jair. He looks like first team all pro Jair so far. And again, just nobody really throwing his way, and Love did and almost paid for it. That's the type of lockdown coverage Jair has had so far in camp. Edgerrin Cooper, another player we need to talk about. There's no one specific play that I can tell, but I can tell you he had 3 run stops in the run game. Another play from a passing standpoint where there was like a check down over the middle. He did an awesome job. This one I can talk about a little bit more detailed. I was watching him on the play because I'm like, all right, I want to see some Edgerrin Cooper here. And he dropped into coverage, had the deeper zone, made sure he got back to his point on the field and covered everything deep. then he could sense and tell there was going to be a check down over the middle and reacted to it perfectly, screamed to the football, and the guy still caught it. I can't remember who the receiver was on the play, but Cooper was there immediately. And again, that speed and athleticism immediately shows off, and he stops it for maybe 2-3 yard gain. But he's just right there immediately. And again, read it well, got to his drop, read the play, came up quick, and made the stop. For at least four stops that I saw, probably could have been some more that maybe I missed, but he was flying around the field and making just stops in the pass game and the run game all over the place. We saw some more scuffles. Actually, our first scuffles, I think, of training camp on Saturday. We had the first one was Dontavian Wicks and Keyshawn Nixon were getting into it. That got pretty physical, like nothing too crazy, but it got pretty physical. And then there was a scrum and offense and defense came together and it was pretty chippy. And then maybe 3-4 plays later, Travis Glover and Aaron Mosby get into it. And, Glover was standing over him. And I think like it was a thing. And then I think Matt LaFleur came over and told like the defense to like settle down. And Rashawn Gary was pissed. Like, he was super upset. He was yelling at LaFleur being like, I can't quote certain things, but he was not happy with Matt. And it was like, that sounds like it's not a good thing. It was not an issue whatsoever. There was no problems here. Like, that's the intensity of Gary and the intensity of practice. And you love that stuff. You love Gary having his guys back on the defensive side of the ball. The general thought here is like, listen, I'm fine with our guys settling down, but what happened was not acceptable of what the offensive player did. Like, talk to them. And like, he just had his guys back. And like, and then he went and talked to the offense, like not negative stuff. Like, this leadership stuff from Rashawn. I loved it. I personally loved it. It did not undercut Matt in any way. It was intense, but it was like, he's just fighting for his guys. And you love it. You love it. Like I said, it's another thing if he's like undercutting Matt and trying to show him up. It nothing to do with that whatsoever at all. Just defending his guys, talking passionately about it, getting a little bit in Matt's face, and all good stuff. This is football. This is exactly what you want to see. You want to see the competitiveness, the juice, the leadership. It was all there. You don't obviously want to see scuffles too much, but the way these scuffles went, you're mostly okay with it. You love that competitive nature in those type of practices. And I'm sure at that point, the offense was struggling again. They had awful performances in the first four practices. I'm sure the offense was getting frustrated. No question about it. Defense has been kicking their butt every play, every day. And I'm sure the offense was getting tired of it. And I'm sure tempers were ready to flare a little bit. Offense got theirs at the end with the touchdown drive from Jordan. Sean Clifford put together a 2-minute drive that I think got him into field goal range as well. So offense had a nice end of the day, but at that point in time, defense was winning big time again. And you could tell again, I think the offense was a little bit frustrated. James Turner was the kicker for the day. It's been James Turner one day, and then Joseph and Carlson the next, and then Turner, and then Carlson and Joseph. Turner had 6 more opportunities to kick. He went 2-for-3 on the first one. He's gone 2-for-3 every time. And then technically 2-for-3 on the last one, although it was, he had 1 kick with the ones and then 2 kicks with the twos. He missed the first and then made the 2 with the twos. So technically, basically 2-for-3 again. But he's been 2-for-3 every time, which leaves him 12 of 18 now in camp, staying consistent at 66.6%. Meanwhile, Joseph and Carlson did not kick. Both of them are 11 of 12 in camp so far. So Joseph and Carlson remain well ahead from a statistical standpoint of Turner at this point in time. All right, some miscellaneous stuff on Jordan Love's first drop back to pass of training camp. TJ Slayton had what I think would have been a sack on the play. Nice job getting through the line quickly. And like I said, probably would have had a sack. It was Quay Walker who came down with the diving interception of Jordan Love. It was a screen pass. It got messed up pretty much immediately. Immediate pressure. Dylan and Musgrave are running into each other. Love tries to loft it over. There's nobody there except Quay Walker, who makes a ridiculous diving interception, keeps the ball from hitting the ground, maintains possession, and comes up with a huge pick for the defense. Nice start to camp for Quay Walker so far. Didn't see it, but according to Mike Clemens, Aaron Mosby picked off Sean Clifford, so another interception for Sean Clifford. Carl Brooks had a would-be sack. Emmanuel Wilson continues to run really, really well. He had probably like a 25 to 30 yard run that he burst off of, I believe, right tackle. And then, gave the safety a little juke in the open field. So really nice day and really nice run from Emmanuel Wilson. Grant Dubose did a phenomenal job covering a punt. He chucked, I think, Zane Anderson off of him and then was right there to make a play on the punt returner. Daniel Whalen, a little bit sporadic at times in practice, but overall had a really nice day. But his punt of the day, he's doing like the coffin corner thing. He punts it down to the 3 yard line. I've talked about this. This is something he struggled with, is getting that ball to check back up. Beautiful backspin on it. Ball pops up, goes back to the 8 yard line and gets down at the 8 yard line. So booming punt, great hang time, down to the 3, bounces back to the 8 and down at the 8. So gorgeous, gorgeous punt from Whalen. Lots of illegal formation, false starts, high snaps, a lot of weird, bizarro stuff from the offense. They kind of have to rein that in a little bit. That was an issue on Saturday. Keyshawn Nixon had back-to-back plays with pass breakups, both against Jordan Love. He's also had a great start to camp. His coverage looks very improved. His run stopping has been awesome. He's got multiple plays at or near the line of scrimmage in the run game. Really, really nice start for Keyshawn Nixon. He looks hungry, he looks competitive, and he is ready, and this is the best I've seen him cover at any point over the last few years. And of course, Rashawn Gary got his as well. He had a would-be sack going up against Kadeem Telfort in team activities. He continues to absolutely tear it up. And of course, again, was our Luigi's Player of the Week. Player of the day for me was Javon Bullard. He had the big pick six and a couple plays, but of course, all the buzz was about Jordan Love. We will get another opportunity to go to practice on Sunday and see Jordan Love again and see if this offense can carry over the momentum that they finished with, completing a couple of those two-minute drills into points. That is going to do it for me today for all of today's coverage. Shout out to our Hall of Fame and All-Pro members, Most Hated Minnesotan, PJ Wynn, John Wild, Shea Brad Dad, Brandon Paletta, Jennifer Wright, Boom Handle, Donna Lee, Lori Lord, Baby QB, David McCluskey, Donald Decker, Dan Miller, Alex Wong, Arnaldo Espinoza, Peter Ritaka, Caleb Cookster, SoCal Pack, and Dan Gesford. I will see you guys tomorrow. I'll see you guys again today for our Quick Hits episode. But after that, I will see you tomorrow. And until next time, and as always, go Pack, go.